behind-the-scenes look of Smashville's team. This is Preds Insiders with Adam Vingan. Smashville lives here on 102.5 and 106.3 The Game and the Game Nashville Sports Network.
Preds Insiders, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. No, I'm not Adam Vingan, as the intro has laid out for you here this evening. This is Nick Kieser, filling in for the illustrious reporter that we have on DVD. He's out of town. But I am enlightened to share that Tennesseans Alex Doherty is our guest here this week on Preds Insiders. Alex, how you doing? Glad to have you on, man.
I'm great. Glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. The Preds just embarked on their five-game road trip. We're going to react to last night's overtime loss. Samuel Girard with the dagger, beating Brady Shea on a breakaway. So, plenty to get into as the Predators are out of town. Now they're gone for roughly the next 11 days, Alex. So, what did you think overall about their start to finish, but more importantly, defensively? Because I feel like we saw some improvements, i.e. Brady Shea, I thought was great all the way up until the very end last night in Colorado. But was there anything else that stuck out to you about last night's game in terms of the overall 5-on-5 play, special teams, anything kind of just pop out for you?
I mean, overall, I think last night the game in Colorado was probably one of their best 5-on-5 performances, considering that that Colorado has a couple of very dangerous 5-on-5 players in Nathan MacKinnon and Cale Makar. I thought Nashville did a good job. Look, Nathan MacKinnon is going to get his chances and he's going to do some things, but outside of that, like the 5-on-5, the Nashville Predators were really good. The expected goals numbers were crazy high for Nashville compared to Colorado. Strangely enough, Alex Georgiev, who has not had a good season, was actually pretty good. Like, he had some good saves, especially late. There were a couple saves late in the third period where the Predators nearly won the game. I mean, there was the play that Roman Josi made where he goes in front of the net and backhands it, and it just barely stays out. That's just a little bit of puck luck that Nashville's doesn't have right now. But I thought 5-on-5, they were good. The special teams there wasn't a whole lot of special teams in that game. Their second power play, Nashville's second power play, was very bad. That was the Michael McCarron got boarded, and the fans were not happy about that call. I think it was a little bit of a generous call for the Nashville,
probably,
if I'm being honest.
Yeah.
They got a point, but it did feel like a game that they should have won. And the problem is with Nashville right now, they are not in they don't have the luxury of games in which they play well. They have to come away with 2 points.
Oh, just yeah.
The hole that they've dug themselves in, they don't have the luxury of saying, well, we played well, we got a point, it's okay, we can move on. They have got to get every point that they can right now.
Yeah, they absolutely do. And I ultimately thought, you know, similar things as you. But, you know, more importantly, I thought that Nashville's first goal sticks out a lot to me. And obviously, I stirred the pot on Twitter. We can dive more into our questions later on. But one thing that I loved was that Mark Delgaiso continued to showcase why he's a reliable guy to have in the lineup. And so his assist got taken away during the first intermission. I believe it was right before they went to the break. But he generated a phenomenal look from the blue line. I know it was a very, very quick play. It wasn't something that was flashy. It wasn't something that you would go, hey, that's on a highlight reel. He just threw it on net, and Luke Evangelista, right place, right time. You know, he kind of created that chance. He was down low, threw it back up top, and the puck found its way on Delgaiso's stick. And look, he made the most of that one great look early on, and I think it caught everyone off guard for sure. And at times, Mark has been able to fly up the ice, create chances, Alex, and last night was just that one play was a good microcosm of what's to come for him. And you know, I think last week it was indicative that he felt comfortable based on his performance, but he also told me that he felt comfortable on the ice now, more so than he did last year. You know, he got a few cups of coffee in the league last year. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I think that was a good way for Nashville to start off a game. They have struggled with starts. Is there anything that comes to mind defensively for you just in his game currently? And is there something that maybe you would like to see more of in terms of Nashville starts?
Yeah, it was good to see Evangelista get a goal too, because
you know, he was on a goalie too.
His only goal was an empty netter, and so he got one, a real goal, so to speak. So maybe, you know, maybe that gets him going. But Delgado has been, so after the Florida game, that awful 6-2 loss in Florida, a couple days later we talked to Brunette, and he said that Delgado was their best defenseman that game. Now, sort of a backhanded compliment, they were terrible in that game.
Right.
Wasn't a good performance. But Delgado, you know, a relatively unknown player on this roster heading into the season, has started to show why he could be a part of the sort of puzzle going forward. I thought he was great in the Utah game, the 4-0 shutout. And yeah, I think he was pretty good in that Colorado game. The Delgado thing is, you know, is that going to continue the whole season? Can they rely on him to be a guy that does that kind of thing every night? We'll see. I think he could. He's got the skills to do it, but it comes down to they are going to need their big guys, Yossi, Shea, Carrier, Lauzon, to be just, they're going to have to be, I mean, not flawless, but they're going to have to be just incredible defensively down the rest of the way in order to climb themselves out of this hole. I mean, it's like, yeah, it's great to have sparks from young guys like Delgado and from other players, but I mean, it's about the top, you know, 8 to 10 roster players at this point. Are they all going to finally play together, be connected, as Brunette says, and find a way to actually get some points and to sustain it for a long period of time? So, really like that guys like Delgado are you know, coming along, and I think that he could be a part of it going forward, but. Yeah, it's just there's so many other things going wrong. Like when Delgado is the one guy that you're like, hey, this guy's pretty good.
Yeah,
it just
right.
means that, gosh, there must be a lot going on wrong.
Yep. There's definitely a myriad of things to take a look at. You know, we've mentioned Brady Shea, and he's not living up to what Nashville paid him this offseason so far, for sure. You know, Robbie Stanley on this very program last week said there's no bones about it. He's just been bad. Like there's just nothing else to truly say. But I think he did have a few good looks defensively. Offensively, I'm not looking for too much from him right now, but I thought he held his own pretty well against a very fast Colorado team, kind of decimated team currently still. They did get Arturi Lehkonen back in the lineup recently, so he did see him last night. But, you know, Roman Yossi too. You know, he got his 10th assist last night. I think he's one of, I think it's 15 defensemen or so that have double-digit assists so far this season. But I think there's more to demand from him offensively. You know, last night he created some great looks. Like you said at the very top of the show, was he drove the net. That puck almost went in. I couldn't believe it didn't go in myself. That was close, even seeing that video that you posted very quickly thereafter. You know, too, I think it's underrated that the second pairing of Lauzon and Carrier has been kind of underrated to some regard. Now, Jeremy, not off to his most ideal start either, but I think Alex has looked pretty well at generating some offense at times when he jumps up there on the rush. He's kind of like, you know, a better version of what Delgado could be one day, possibly. Not 100% positive on that. It's too early to kind of tell so far, but we'll have to find out. But Alex, what did you make about how UC Saros has continued to look? You know, last night was no small feat for him to go up against that Colorado team, and you know, he was able to make 29 of 32 saves that he faced last night, and he's coming off of a great game against Utah. But do you think he's kind of starting to settle into his own to this point?
Yeah, he's been really good recently. There were a couple saves last night that there was one that was where it was stopped. He stopped it with his right pad, and it fluttered out in front, and someone got a shot off. I think it was who was that? It was what's that guy's name?
I'm trying to remember when that
Logan
was,
O'Connor.
Too. That's right.
It was Logan O'Connor.
Yeah. It was right in front. Yeah.
Yeah, Logan O'Connor got it right in front, and UC was all over it and got it with his glove. And I think he stopped him just shortly thereafter on another one. This has been what's so strange about this start compared to last year, right? Last year, the Predators were 5-10, mostly because UC Saros was really struggling.
Without a doubt, yeah.
He was, I mean, his save percentage was in the tank. he was just like not playing well. I mean, Kevin Lankinen was winning more games than him at that point.
Well, he still is now too.
Yeah, that's true. And that was a big part of the problem last year. So when it wasn't until later in the season that he got going. I mean, that was like a really long wait. But this is kind of the opposite, right? Like the rest of the team has been struggling, especially on offense. And Saros has been the only reason they've been in games for a lot of these recent performances. I mean, the Utah game, I think they played a much better defensive game in front of him. But you know, he was honestly, Saros was like not really the problem for the last has not been the problem for the last like couple weeks, right? Maybe you could say maybe the first couple weeks he was not playing well. I mean, he was letting in some goals he shouldn't have. He has been the reason that they've even been close to winning games recently. His save percentage is still low. His goals average is still, you know, not where you'd want it to be. But I think Saros is, outside of probably Philip Forsberg, I think Saros is probably like their most important player right now. Probably those two are the top two right now. So I think Saros has a way of finding another level. I think if they can get him even better, if they can find him like making saves, like there was that stretch a couple years ago where he was stopping everything. If they can find that, then they'll be even better. But you can't just ask your goaltender who's already playing well to just play even better. You've got to go get some offense for him.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I completely agree. I think Forsberg and Saros have been some of the best players, if not the best, on the team so far. Nick Kieser, Alex Doherty from the Tennessean here with you on Preds Insiders this evening. Coming up, Alex and I are going to dive into some comments that Barry Trotz made last week about mentioning the word rebuild and maybe what that means moving forward for this team if their play consistently doesn't, you know, come up to snub for what he's expecting of this team. We will take your questions as well. Alex and I fielded those on Facebook and Twitter last night, so we're going to sift through those as well. Then also kind of just look ahead for what's coming up for these Nashville Predators. They'll play Edmonton on Thursday and then play Calgary the very next. They'll face off against Tyson Barrie, who the Preds had last year, and then they'll also see Kiefer Sherwood and Kevin Lankinen later on this trip as well. You're listening to the Preds Insiders here on 102.5 and 106.3 The Game. Preds Insiders, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Nick Kieser, Alex Doherty from the Tennessean here with us this evening, talking about the local hockey team. They're off to a slow start, but there is reason for optimism. But is there reason for optimism coming from General Manager Barry Trotz? We'll talk about that here in the next few minutes. Alex, it's been, you know, I want to call it lackluster. It's been overwhelmingly feeling that way for me, at least for the first few weeks. And the fans have been clamoring for more as well after spending over $108 million this offseason. So do you feel like after we heard Barry Trotz's comments last week that it's completely warranted that he slowly begins what his version of a rebuild looks like? You know, they kind of set the table here. He was on Stillman & Company last week, and he mentioned a few guys, you know, like a Svechkov or a Reed Schaefer. You know, I thought that was interesting that he just kind of tossed in some prospects. Mm-hmm. But how do you feel about his comments there early on? And we'll hear from him in just a second, but do you think those comments are warranted to, you know, ignite this team right now?
Yes. I mean, you said a second ago, you wouldn't call it lackluster. I think I would call it that. It has been a very poor start for Nashville. 12 points in 16 games. They have a lot of work to do ahead of them. But the rebuild thing, I think that the only issue that Barry ran into, I think, is just like that word is a very loaded word in sports, right? I mean, if you look at any team, any league, any sport, when you use that word for whatever reason, that or tank, I guess is another one, like loaded words. Like if you were to say like, yeah, we're going to tank.
Yeah.
Boy, that would have been crazy. Like people would have lost their minds. So it's like that using that word, but I will add that he said rebuild plan, which I thought was interesting.
Right.
He said that we're going to start our rebuild plan.
Mm-hmm.
And so as soon as I heard that, you know, I was like, well, we've got to get some clarification here. So I was able to talk to him and got some information from him about that and put that out at the Tennessean, which you can read. But so when I remember talking to him, he said he listed some names of people who were like, okay, these people are going nowhere. Like, these people aren't going anywhere. And it's the ones you would expect. It was I've got the list here. He said Forsberg, O'Reilly, Yossi, Shea, and of course Stamkos and Marchessault. And then he added Soros, of course.
Right.
So, like, I mean, there are some people he didn't mention, right? He didn't mention Nyquist to me. He didn't mention Colton Sissons.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't mention Lozon or Carrier. He didn't mention Tommy Novak. There's a lot of people on that list he did not. That I mean, he listed like six people. There's like 20 other or 15 other ones.
Right.
So, like, I think that where his idea of this like rebuild plan, which he clarified, is it's more about. He made these moves. He had money to spend to make a competitive team in the short run while guys like Kemmel and Svechkov and Matthew Wood and Tanner Molendijk are all, you know, they're all 18, 19, 20, 21 years old when they can come up and play big time minutes. But what happens if that competitive team is not very competitive?
Mm-hmm.
Well, then you have to go ahead and start their clock because you got to get them up here at some point. And obviously, some of those guys can't come up yet, like Wood or Molendijk. But there's something to be said for wanting to go ahead and just, it's tricky because, you know, he obviously spent a lot of money, but I don't think that he didn't leverage the future on this. Like, he spent a lot of money that's all basically going to be spent in the next 3 years,
yeah, exactly,
four years, and. You know, if it doesn't work, then that's a lot of money down the drain. But at the same time, like, he did not trade away. He has a ton of first round picks.
Three.
Yeah. He's got a lot of first round picks. He's got a lot of players he just acquired that he likes, like Igor Surin and obviously Molendijk. Like, there's a lot of the future that's like kind of ready to go. It's just like he needed to buy time for these next 2 years. So that's how I interpret it.
Yeah. No, absolutely. And the Preds had the best of both worlds. That's what I think fans kind of forget at times, that they do have the young assets. They do have the talent that's there. But now it's about who's coming up and who is fulfilling what everyone's desired.
Yeah.
Guys that stay for a long time. You know, it was interesting to me after seeing last night, Colton Sissons scored his 90th goal with the Preds last night. It was a failed tweet by me, but I was trying to say someone that had stayed with the organization that reached 90 goals.
Oh, okay.
And there's not very many guys that have scored 90 and been here their entire careers thus far.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Forsberg wasn't drafted by Nashville. That was what I left out. So, but anyway.
Well, but what I was going to say was, you know, I think another way to look at it, this is not me trying to gloss over the terrible start, but I think what maybe people need to realize, like, okay, they spent all this money, and this is kind of what I was trying to explain a second ago.
Mm-hmm.
Imagine for a second that they hadn't spent money. Like, imagine for a second that those weren't free agent ads and said that they were trades.
Sure.
In which they acquired big contracts, trading away young players. Like what if they had traded Tanner Molendijk to get Steven Stamkos? Or what if they had traded Matthew Wood and Svechkov and all these guys to get these players? They didn't do that. He signed them in free agency. That money may or may not be well spent. But he can still roll in these younger players. So I guess it sounds like I'm saying it could always be worse, but it really is more just like the rebuild plan is more of a, I have this option B that I can just press that button at any point and just go ahead and start option B since option A didn't work.
Mm-hmm.
Now the real key though is, and this, we talked about this earlier, is like the Brady Shea one is the bigger issue because he's signed for 7 years.
I agree.
And if it turns out that he's not a piece that works, that's going to be a problem.
Yeah.
If Stamkos doesn't work out, if he's washed, I mean, obviously, I think that's not true anymore. I think we've seen that he's improved.
Yeah, no.
Like, same thing with Marchessault. But, like, those are short-term, relatively short-term contracts. You can get out of those pretty soon if you need to.
Well, and they have the clauses, too. So that's something to keep in mind, too.
They do have the clauses. Sometimes you can get around those. But,
sure, sure.
The money is not necessarily the issue. It's more about the situation, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, you had his expectations. They were going to be a top contender in the Western Conference. Obviously, that's not happening. So I guess it's not like, it's more of a, I think of it more like there was a win now program, or sorry, a win now option, and then a plan B to go ahead and start the next phase of the core option.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, yeah, that's a way to look at it for sure. The Preds have 5 draft picks in the first 2 rounds this coming summer, which is massive for them. But also, how does Barry Trotz use that kind of to his advantage? And I want to play this clip for our listeners really quickly, just for some more context, Alex, just for the sake of understanding what he means by these comments and what it was like in raw time to hear this as well. But this is what Barry Trotz had to say last week on So Many Company.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think, you know, we get on the road here a little bit. I'm trying to do some things right now. You know, we will be limited a little bit because of some of the contracts that we do have. You know, if we don't get it going, then I'm going to start our rebuild plan a little bit. You know, what we did in the summer was, as I say, fantasy hockey until we become a good team. If we do not become a good team, then you know, we're going to see a lot more of our kids start, you know, starting their process. Like I said, we brought in the veteran players to extend this year and be a threat, I think I use the term. And then hopefully in the next coming years, our young guys come in and they take a bigger role. So if we fall out into a position where we fall out and it's not happening or it doesn't come together, then, you know, I'm going to start probably that process and you're going to see some kids and we'll start our process on getting them the needed games that they need and start developing them and still trying to win because we've got some good players. But, you know, we're gonna shake it up if we don't get going pretty soon, for sure. It's a cultural thing. I don't like losing. I didn't come here to lose. That's why we tried to do the things that we did this summer. So
that was Barry Trotz. Alex, go ahead.
I was just gonna say that, like, on the younger players that he just mentioned, the names that he mentioned to me and that he's said to other people too is like, he talked about Reed Schaefer, for example.
Mm-hmm.
He talked about Svechkov coming up. He talked about Ozzie Weisblatt. He didn't mention UFCO specifically, but I think that's another one as well.
Yeah, I would agree.
And then obviously Tanner Mullendike is in Saskatoon. He can't come over yet. Same thing with Andrew Gibson. But mm-hmm. those guys are part of the future, of course, for next year.
Yeah, no.
Now, I think we can maybe I think some people are like, all right, so take Reed Schaefer, for example. Like, Reed Schaefer is not a offensive, like, prospect necessarily. So, like,
sure.
he mentioned specifically putting, like, he was like, what if we brought Reed Schaefer up to play with Steven Stamkos? And I think a lot of people who know who Reed Schaefer is were like, what? But Reed Schaefer, for those who don't know, is a kind of a bigger player. He's the guy that they acquired in the trade for Matthias Ekholm.
He's a big power forward, for sure.
Power forward style. Not exactly like an offensive. He doesn't blow you away with his offensive skills.
He's got some upside, but not like explosive by any means.
Right. And so I think if he were, I will say this, like, if he was a power forward type that they thought could be an NHL power forward, he would be up right now.
Yes.
Because that's what they need.
Yep.
So, like, I don't know if they're just waiting on that to develop. He's 21. He's probably got another couple of years of development, but, like, by the time he's 23, he's just going to be what he is. And
yeah, exactly.
I think he's a bottom six forward. That's mm-hmm. what I think he is at this point. Maybe, like, when the Michael McCarron, Cole Smiths move on.
Maybe even Sissons too, yeah.
He's part of that new bottom six, but he's not a – I mean, I just don't see a world in which he's part of a tandem with Steven Stamkos.
No.
That's just me. But Kimmel, on the other hand, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
Svechkov, I think that would be ideal. Svechkov has definitely the skills to be able to do that kind of thing.
Yeah. I mean, could you imagine seeing Kimmel and Stamkos from their office on the power play on 2 units if they possibly could have that one day? I mean, that's something to look forward to possibly.
Or just or even 5-on-5. Like, Svechkov has a is really strong on the puck.
Yes, he is.
And would be a great addition in that. If he can shore up the middle, but mm-hmm. you know, he's injured right now, kind of battling through some stuff. So,
mm-hmm.
Anyways, I just when listening to that clip back, Trotz talking about the young kids coming up, I just wanted to give people an idea of who he's talking
about.
Yeah,
no,
because
for
there's some guys that can't come up yet. I mean, Matthew Woods in Minnesota, he can't come here. It's not Mullendike, it's not Gibson. It's going to be guys from Milwaukee right
mm-hmm.
now.
Yeah, no, it absolutely will be. And Alex and I will dive more into the future coming up with our fan questions, because we got a myriad of things that fans would like to know more about. And so we will do that coming up next on Preds Insiders. More to break down. This is Nick Kieser and Alex Doherty on Preds Insiders. You're listening to 102.5 and 106.3 The Game. Preds Insiders, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Nick Kieser, Alex Doherty from the Tennessean here with you this evening. We're breaking down your fan questions. Alex and I asked, what do you want to know about the local hockey team here right now? It's not looking great. It's a little bit of a grim start. They lost in overtime last night in Colorado to start their road trip, but we're taking your questions at large. So, Alex, without any further ado, let's get to our first question of the night. And we're going to start things off with Catherine from Twitter. She asks, why is Bruno's system so difficult for players to adjust to? What was it about Zucker's skill set last season that made him able to blend in so easily? What other players from around the league would be a good fit in the system as well? So for some quick context, Andrew Brunette was able to coach Jason Zucker up a little bit before earlier in his career when Jason was starting out with the Minnesota Wild. He was someone that, you know, Bruno was watching, so he was able to kind of make sure that if they did acquire a guy like a Zucker, you know, around the trade deadline, that he would fit in almost seamlessly. But it did take him a few games for sure. But Alex, how do you view this question, and why do you think it's been difficult for some guys?
I think it's probably more difficult for the defensemen than it is for the forwards, which is why you saw Yossi struggle with it early last year. You're seeing Brady Shea struggle with it now. And that's because I think that the regroups are so quick, and the emphasis of getting the puck up the ice via the pass is so important. So tactically speaking, the biggest thing to know about Brunette's system is that the forwards are moving through the neutral zone extremely quickly, and they're hitting spots. The defensemen have to hit spots with passes with like surgical precision.
Yes.
They have to hit these passes very quickly, and if they don't hit the pass, then you have to dump it and you have to go chase it. So like and that's because the forwards are moving up the ice really quickly, and they're moving at angles and trying to create space along the blue line to get by the defense. So the defense, take a guy like Brady Shea, who is a good passer. He's a really good passer. The outlet passes are in different places. Like when he collects the puck in the defensive zone and tries to create a breakout, guys are in different places than he's used to. And so like his instincts to maybe pass it along the wall or to hit a guy in stride are just like different than he's used to for 10 years. Forward-wise, and she brought up Jason Zucker, I think it's just about speed, and Jason Zucker had speed. So, like, if you have speed, all you have to do is just catch up to where you need to go. I want to angle this way, or I want to hold up at the line this way. Like, it's a pretty simple for them.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is, what happens when you have a guy with a ton of skill but not a lot of speed, like Steven Stamkos? Doesn't have a ton of speed, has a lot of skill. He's got to find out, all right, when I break in, or when our team has the puck, how do I want to fall in? How do I want to support that player? How do I want to funnel into the offensive zone? That takes time. That takes a lot of time, because you've heard Brunette talk about being predictable. Like if someone like Marchessault, or better example would be Novak, because they had so many issues with coordination.
Mm-hmm.
When Novak would have the puck in the offensive zone, they were almost never... The movements of the puck were almost never predictable. So, like, Stamkos would sometimes support near him, would sometimes be opposite him, and sometimes be somewhere in the middle, and, like, it never was working. And
yeah.
So they really need a guy. I don't know who that good fit would be. She also asked that.
Yeah, it's true.
I've thought about Brock Nelson as a guy that's in for the Islanders right now. He's in the last year of his deal.
That's an interesting move, yeah.
Only because Brock Nelson has...
familiarity with Trotz.
Yeah, familiarity with Trotz. And I mean, maybe Bruno, he would... It doesn't have any direct lineage to that. But he would be maybe a good fit. But he's also expensive. At this point, I do not think they need to be shopping at the deadline.
Nope.
They need to be selling. So yeah, that, I think that's kind of what's going on there.
Yeah, that's an interesting point of view to kind of have on the system. And one other thing that I will add to it as well, when Bruno talks about being predictable, I've seen some fans be like, but you shouldn't be predictable. Oh, he's not talking about,
right. He's not talking about the opponent.
He's talking about his own team knowing where they have to be.
Exactly.
And
yeah.
So if they're not, then and sometimes he's kind of said it, you know, in the middle of a sentence, and it's like,
yeah,
what? But for us, it's like, okay, well, he's talking about his own players.
Yeah, it's a very football. It's unfortunately like right. In the football world, being predictable on offense is not yep. a good thing. But in hockey, you need to know where your player is going to be especially with support. Because if you go onto the boards and you lose the puck, you need to know where to chip it in order for your guy to go get it.
Yep.
If you don't know if he's behind you or in front of you or where he is, then you're just going to turn the puck over.
Yeah, no, exactly. And that's why a Mark Delgado is in the lineup more consistently lately. He's moving the puck. He knows where these guys are going to be.
Mm-hmm.
Tanya on Facebook would like some answers as to what is happening with the team on an emotional level. And what's going on is in the locker room, is it management? It seems like everyone is passing the puck. Also, do they have plans to get a center? So Alex and I kind of talked about a player that might fit the system. Brock Nelson is an interesting name for sure that you've thrown out there. People really have gravitated to this whole Trevor Zegras thing. I don't think it's going to happen at all. But I'll go first on this one real quick, Alex. Just in the locker room, I think it's pretty even keel. There's not much going on. The frustration is evident, you know, post-game. The most honest player that we've had so far, aside from Stamkos, has been Jonathan Marchessault. And, you know, Roman Josi does a great job of laying out, you know, how he feels about games as well. But, you know, I don't think it's at a point where it's toxic, if that's mm-hmm. what people would like to know. It's not toxic at all. I think guys are just wishing that they had those wins on their back right now, and they don't. And that just makes pressure more and more intense. And so I think for the locker room, they're fine. They're on the road right now, too. I thought they looked like they were playing more connected. You know, that's another word that we've heard a lot lately. They seem to kind of find that cohesion and pockets of games. But I think throughout, you know, this road trip with the four games left, it's going to be about in the next two games they have, too. It's back-to-back. It's how do they find each other seamlessly without having to think too much as well. So I think it's okay on that standpoint. Is there anything different that you've kind of noticed, Alex?
I just wanted to address that first part of her question about what do they look like
yes.
emotionally, the uh-huh. emotions behind this team. It is difficult for us to get a really good grasp on that.
That's true.
I think the problem is, you know, we only see the team practice was one thing. Practice is actually a pretty good place to maybe get a read on that. But like after wins or losses, it's very difficult to get a read. Like obviously they're going to be upset after a loss, and obviously they're going to be happy after a win. But it's the practice is where you kind of see some other things pop out. I will say that I have definitely noticed some of the younger players seem more frustrated either with playing time or with lack of, you know, production or whatever. That has been more obvious to me this year, especially I would say a couple guys like Tomasino, like Parsonen, like Evangelista. There was that time where he was almost healthy scratched. I think that, and I don't mean they're frustrated with the coach. I think they're just frustrated with the whole situation. Because
even themselves too. Yeah,
they feel like they are, maybe they can provide more. They can do more for the team, and they're not able to. Meanwhile, the top dogs are also not producing. So it's like they're frustrated about it as well. So there's been a lot of that going around. I don't think that we're at a point where like there's, you know, there's not like, what's the word, like infighting, or there's not like,
yeah, no.
there's not like personality conflicts, at least not ones that I'm detecting.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I'd say it's just like the frustration levels just like at practices and definitely after losses, it's just like very, mm-hmm. very potent, right?
Yeah, now. No, it is. And, you know, that, you know, comment that you made about the young guys really quickly leads into our next good question that we got. And this was sort of the same sentiment that Sav and Mia had on Twitter. They would like to know our thoughts on Philip Tomasino. You know, what's up with him getting scratched, you know, as much as he has this year. He's, by the way, he's tied for the most scratches on the team so far this year. My list, I've got Parsonen at 8 games, Tomasino at 8 games, mm-hmm. Faber, who's with Columbus, is at 8 games as well. So that's a great question to kind of ask. And, you know, Alex, why do you think he's been able to make the most of his chances this year. You know, he must have had a good offseason. His contract came late. But, you know, why has he been playing so well? Obviously, we touched on speed as that part of it. Just in your mind, why do you think he's had success when he does get those chances?
Are you talking about Tomasino?
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's just he's determined. It's just determination. He is convinced that if he does not do everything right, and this is just the way that, for whatever reason, Tomasino has been treated since he's been here, if he does not have a perfect shift every time, that he's going to be healthy scratched again. And I think that has focused him. I mean, as unfair or fair as that is, it just seems like that's the way it is right now. And if he has a moment of bad defense, or if he has a turnover or whatever, he's going to be benched again. And that's focused him in a way. I think that's a really harsh way to treat a young player. I think you need to fail in the NHL sometimes in order to succeed. But I'm not seeing anything out there that says like, oh, this guy needs top 6 minutes.
Yeah.
I think he's in a fine role.
He is in a good role. Yeah.
I think he's getting the minutes that he deserves. I think he's getting 11 minutes a night, 12, mm-hmm. 11, 12 minutes a night. I think that's perfect.
That's perfect, yeah.
But I don't think they need to bench him for just like a single mistake that happens, mm-hmm. because there's a lot of guys that make mistakes like that that don't get benched.
And, right.
If you're going to find a way for this kid to succeed, he's just got to try it, and you got to see what you have. I mean, some people are saying like he's on the way out. I don't know. I mean, I thought the same thing last year. I honestly thought last year he was going to be gone. I when they sent him down and he was in Milwaukee almost all year, and then they brought him up at the end.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I thought that was pretty much it, and especially with Brunette's comments.
Yeah, exactly. And I think Brunette's comments were very telling about what he expected from Tomasino should he have been back, and obviously he did get that contract, and I didn't see another deal around the league that was as late as his at training camp going right into it.
Yeah.
I mean, it was insane to see what that was going to look like, and I don't know if both parties just really wanted to wait it out or whatever it was, but no matter what, he is in the lineup. He's looking a lot better, and then I want to touch on this. We won't get too deep into it, but obviously sure. Tommy Novak is out right now. He's missed 4 games in a row. You know, I don't think, to answer Austin's brief thought here, I don't think it's going to significantly change the lineup because things are gelling with that, quote, kid line, as Brunette has called it. I think once he's healthy, he'll go back in there. Nothing's going to look too different, I don't think. I would imagine that third line just being Novak with those guys. I don't think it's going to look too significantly different, but we'll see what happens on that front. And then I think one thing that fans have clamored for more about, and we can make this sort of our last question before we get to Sean, is there any chance at all that Luke Shen could be traded? Are they not aware of how slow he is and how he has just been so bad to this point in his career? And really quickly, look, Shen is a slow guy for sure. He is not the fastest skater. He is not going to be this guy that elusively breaks out the puck and is always precise. I will tell you this, though. Him working with Adam Oates and him working on his timing has made a big difference, and that is why he's in the NHL now. He just got to 1,000 games. Clearly, they value him for a myriad of reasons, not just for those things, but also for his leadership qualities on and off the ice. I can tell you this right now. Younger guys have looked up to him and had time with him away from the rink as well. So I think that is one significant reason as to why you keep a culture piece like him in there. Fans don't have to like it. I mean, you're not running the team. Alex and I aren't running the team. We both know he's made horrible choices at times, but that's just what you get. But what's your take on it?
I think there's not a chance that he gets traded. I don't think they're going to do that. I do think there would be a chance that he doesn't play a lot, at some point other players maybe take over and he's more like in the scratch area, and that he just becomes... Like they did this a while back. This has been several years now, but when they acquired Cody McLeod in the playoffs, like right ahead of the playoffs, like this was like 8 years ago, and he didn't play much, and that's because he wasn't a solid contributor on the ice, but he was a big locker room guy, and the players wanted him, and he played a few games. I could see more of that happening, where Luke Shen just becomes a in and out of the lineup kind of guy, especially next year because he has another year left on his deal. But I don't think they're going to trade him. I think that this organization has a higher this organization's perception of Luke Shen is just very different than than other people.
It is. And that's the best way to kind of just look at it, and we'll drop it there. But Sean, our friend Sean, would like to know, based on Alex and I being beer leaguers in the Nashville area, who would win in a face-off, Alex or I? I mean, I played defense growing up, so I don't have much to say other than I played defense. I moved over from offense to defense.
If it's between me and Keezer, I think I'm winning the face-off. But
I did win the face-off at my wedding.
There's another question here about if the gloves were to drop, who emerges victorious? I am not a fighter. I would never fight anyone.
I just told Pete Weber the other day when they were playing Utah that I had over 100 penalty minutes my senior year of high school hockey.
But fighting wasn't allowed in that league, right?
Well, I got in the one fight. It's not allowed.
You got in a fight?
Yes, I did.
In high school?
Yes, I did.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. So
scandal.
Maybe it's something where I just toss Alex. I don't know.
No, I'm not going to lie. I'm pretty good in the face-off circle. I win more than I lose.
Okay.
And I can usually direct the players in the faceoff circle. Like, I'm gonna pull it to this side. I'm gonna hold it here. That is one thing I can do well. I can't do much else well, but I can faceoffs. I'm not bad at.
I love it. Well, those were our questions from Preds fans around the area. So hope you enjoyed our answers there. Coming up next, Alex and I will put a bow on things. Look ahead for the next couple of games that the Preds will play. We've also not touched on one headline, so stay tuned for that. You're listening to Preds Insiders here on 102.5 and 106.3, The Game. Preds Insiders, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Nick Keezer, Alex Doherty here with you this evening, talking about the Nashville Predators. And we just took your questions, so stay tuned for our podcast version. You can revisit what Alex and I went through. So, Alex, let's close the book with a little bit of news from the Predators before they went on the road. Defenseman Dante Fabro's career came to an end with the Predators. He went on waivers, gets claimed by the Columbus Blue Jackets. Just give me your quick thoughts on the Predators deciding to move away from Dante Fabro and him landing in an auspicious place that I did not envision him going to whatsoever.
Are you saying you didn't see him going to Columbus,
no,
or you didn't think he was going to get claimed?
I thought he would get claimed.
Yeah.
Not Columbus.
Yeah. I guess maybe Columbus is a surprise. Montreal was a big one that people were thinking. I think also Buffalo was one possibility.
Mm-hmm.
Those teams didn't. Montreal apparently passed on him, but Buffalo didn't get a chance because Columbus got him first. But I think this is an indictment on the decision to sign him to a contract last spring. I think it didn't make a lot of sense considering that they extended Alex Carrier and they didn't even play Dante Fabro much last year. He was like in half the games, maybe 40 games, something like that. And that is not, it is not an indictment, I think, of Fabro as a player. I think Fabro is a good defenseman. I think he's actually pretty good at what he does. I think their usage of him was suspect. I don't understand the situation where Fabro is either in the lineup playing with Roman Josi or he's not in the lineup at all.
Right.
This, like, they wanted to keep Lauzon Carrier together and then they had Luke Shen. So it created this like kind of jam on the right side of the defense. But I mean, it didn't make a lot of sense how they used him. I think the price tag didn't make a lot of sense for what they signed him for.
No.
But the problem is he got that his RFA number. He signed that one deal to make it his
right.
His qualifying number was $2.5 million, so they couldn't go below that. So once that was locked in, and he didn't become this like everyday guy at $2.5 million, it was either let him walk for nothing.
Yep.
Or keep him on, and you know you have him there in case there's an injury. So
right.
It's like this. It's almost like they got caught in between this like situation where an RFA gets a number attached to him and they can't really get out of it. And, you know, it's unfortunate for the fact that they lost a first round pick for nothing, but I think Fabro will do well in Columbus.
I think he will too. And he joins a group that does have a couple of injuries currently, you know, a couple of familiar faces that he knows, but I know based on guys that were in Nashville, he's got Matthew Olivier that's over there as well. Eric Goodbranson briefly was with the Nashville Predators, so he knows a couple of guys that were teammates here in town, but he knows a couple other guys as well. He's 26 years old, so he's pretty familiar with those younger players, I would say, especially playing for Team Canada. So I think for Dante playing 56 games last year, putting up 13 points.
56, okay.
Yeah, and Luke Shin was, you know, in and out of the lineup too, and he had 6 points, one goal, five assists, I want to say. And I was in person for Luke Shin's goal last season and this year, so I've been present for both of his goals. His first one was in St. Louis last year. But I think there's not a huge disparity in terms of production. Now, in terms of being caught off guard and not being quick enough, obviously we know where Fabbro slots in. He was able to play with Roman Josi, so his ability was there to be in the lineup, Alex. But I think this is indicative of the Predators' trust. But I think it's also, it's the trust in what they have behind them. But I think it's also a sign of this was something that Trotz could do that shook some things up, you know, because he was saying goodbye to guys in the locker room. And guys definitely are going to miss Dante Fabbro. He was a beloved guy around town as well. One thing I'll miss about him for sure is his involvement around Christmas time that they do for the kids here. And just giving presents and having people that come out and skate with them as well. I got to do that last year, but, you know, knowing about that for years, Dante was very involved in Nashville, was a second home for him. So, and I personally thought maybe Vancouver could have been a place where he lands, but they've got enough depth there. He is a BC guy. I thought perhaps that would be another former Predator. He would have been the third guy since July to land there. But it didn't end up happening, so, hey, it is what it is. But, yes, Fabbro will be with the Blue Jackets. He's number 15 for them, an interesting choice by him, and the Predators will be in Columbus on April 1st, on April Fool's Day. So, Alex, the Predators have two games coming up this week on Thursday and Friday, first against the Oilers, then the Flames. How are you feeling about both of those real quick?
Well, if they play good 5-on-5, I think they can win both those games. Edmonton, Connor McDavid's back, right?
Yes, he is back.
He's playing again. So since he's back, and obviously Leon Draisaitl, like it's going to be a challenge to win that game. I think they need to play Saros Friday. I'm sorry. They need to play Saros against Edmonton and hope that Scott Wedgwood can perform against Calgary. Like I said, if they play well as well 5-on-5 as they did against Colorado, they can win both those games. I don't see...
Yeah.
The special teams might be the difference maker, but their 5-on-5 play at the last couple games has been much better.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. We'll have to find out what it looks like from afar here in Nashville. But you've been listening to Preds Insiders with Nick Kieser and Alex Doherty here this week from the Tennessean. Be sure to follow him. Stay in tune with us as well. Coming up next year, we'll have Penalty Box Radio with, I presume, Ann Kimmel and Sean Smith this week live from our studio. So stay tuned for that. You're listening to 102.5 and 106.3, The Game.